Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with Mark Makota, CEO and co-founder of LaunchBoom, and Maria Dutton, LaunchBoom's product launch director. LaunchBoom is quickly becoming the go-to success model for many creators on Kickstarter. Mark, Maria, welcome to the binge. How you doing?
Doing amazing after that intro. That was awesome. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It is great having you. We were just saying before we went on air, this is like a no-brainer to have you guys on this podcast. I'm going to say really quickly, Craft and Conquer, which is our very last episode we did, LaunchBoom. Before that, two or 3 weeks before that, Biome, LaunchBoom. December, Kelp, LaunchBoom. And these aren't small campaigns. So just so my audience understands, Craft and Conquer, which is currently on Kickstarter, $74,000, still 15 days to go. Biome, $400,000. And I think that was, might have been in US dollars. And then I got 1.4 million euros on Kelp. Like, these are not tiny campaigns. These are huge. So it is an honor to have you guys on this podcast. We're going to talk about your story. We're going to get into kind of the LaunchBoom model, if that's cool. And hopefully our listeners walk away with some excitement around the LaunchBoom brand. So first, let's start. I'm going to throw it over to you, Mark. How did you get into this industry? Like, were you like a game designer? Did you do your own Kickstarter campaign? Like, where did this start?
Neither. No, I mean, if we go all the way back to the beginning, it was actually in 2013, was the first time that I got exposed to Kickstarter in general. So way back then, I was just getting out of college. Actually, I went to San Diego State, and I had a digital marketing agency that might be a little bit of a stretch calling that, because it was kind of just like a few friends and I that were almost like freelance collective together that were starting to work on projects together. And one of our other friends had a Kickstarter campaign that he wanted to launch. This was not a game. It was something called EcoCube. And he said, hey, can you help us launch it? And we said, being, you know, kind of blindly optimistic kids out of college, said, sure, let's try to help you launch this thing. And back then, we were really just kind of like along for the ride, learning how to help, you know, someone launch on Kickstarter. Kickstarter was kind of like a different beast back then as well. Yeah. I would say it was less polished. There was a lot of like awesome things about it. It was, you didn't have to have all your marketing ducks in a row quite as much to have success back then, which in many ways was kind of a beautiful thing, right? Because there was a lot of, you can almost like put it up and there's kind of like a lot more organic traction that would happen. But anyways, going into the weeds there, let's get out of the weeds, back to this. We helped him launch. It did over 70,000. And that was the first time that we're like, wow, this is like a lot more fun than the other projects that we were working on. And it also helped a kid that was in college start his business, which I just thought was really, really cool. So then we had another client come to us. We helped them launch to over 100,000. And then Kevin came back with his second product called the EcoCube C. And this is like when we started to dive into the pre-launch, which is really what I would say we're most well known for now, where we were helping them build up an audience prior to the actual Kickstarter. And that one ended up doing 375,000 for his like new and improved product. And so at that time, it was kind of like this moment where we said, this is really cool. Like being able to help creators take their product ideas and use Kickstarter as a platform to not just launch it, but like turn it into a business that they could then go, you know, go pursue full time, right? That was like really what we were seeing happen at that point. So we shut down our agency, which was called Label Creative, and then we switched over to LaunchBoom. This is at the end of 2015. We just shifted our focus, said we want to do this, go full time into this, and just helping creators launch their products and turn them into businesses. And so that's what we did. For the majority of LaunchBoom's existence, I would say we were focused on like the design and tech categories, because that's where we had, that's kind of how, like I just said, that's where we had all of our first launches were in those categories. Yeah. And so we just kind of kept going down that path. And it was about a little over a year, maybe like a year and a half ago, that we started to say, hey, let's see if we can actually start testing with some games board games and see what happens when people use the marketing strategies that have been applied to the design tech space in general, and see how that actually works out. And it seems to be working really, really well. You know, there's like different nuances that we're learning, and we're always open to learn as much as possible. But in general, the principles of how to build up audiences prior to the launch and then use that to have a big launch and ultimately, you know, a successful campaign. We took the same thing that we did in the past with design tech, and now we're applying it to games as well.
When you said you don't want to get into the weeds, but I think it's important for people to understand like how the platform itself has evolved, right?
Yeah.
Like if you go back, you know, to that time, even on the board game side, like you're talking like people putting like pictures of like their kind of hand cut out game design and maybe some sketches of here's the artwork I think we're going to kind of do. And, you know, we're hoping if we get the funding that allows to go and, you know, get a manufacturer to make this game and maybe we can make 100 copies. It was very much along those lines of help me realize my dream. I need funds to help me develop the idea, right? And now it's very much not that. Now it's very much a, hey, if you're not very polished, right? And if this thing doesn't look like it's ready to go to retail pretty much on launch, I don't want to say you're dead in the water, but you were up against so many competitors that do have a polished product and they're using it almost like a pre-order system that you have to get to that level if you want to have success. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I would say so. I mean, it's become a lot more competitive. I mean, there's just a lot, a lot of projects on the platform at any given time. I remember I was looking like a week ago or two weeks ago. I think there was like over 2,000 projects that have pre-launch pages live right now on Kickstarter, you know, and like that doesn't even capture the full, let's say like the extent of the competitive landscape in terms of other games that are out there that may just not have pre-launch pages up yet. And then the amount of live projects, I think, is something like 700 or something, usually at any given time around there. So it is difficult to stand out. And that's where, let's say, like more of a intentional marketing strategy, especially in the pre-launch, can really help a creator be able to not only like gauge demand for their actual project going into it, but then have a higher likelihood of having a successful campaign and not losing a whole bunch of money. I mean, that's the other part about it as well. It's like as it's become more competitive and then people are spending more money on marketing, then there's, you know, more of a risk of losing money when you're spending on that marketing. So we're trying to mitigate risk as much as possible. I mean, there's no perfect system, but as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It surprises me still when I come across people that talk about doing their marketing once they launch. And I mean, that's a no-go these days, right? And like, I even think when I first got in this industry and, you know, my first campaign was almost 6 years ago now. At that time, all the marketing support you got through BackerKit and different, you know, Gelop or, you know, you pick whatever, you know, social media amplifier you had out there, they would jump in on day one, right? So they say, okay, we're going to launch all the ads on day one. We're going to do all the tracking. And you've kind of missed nowadays, like it's kind of too late by that point. You need to have that momentum going into the campaign if you want to have that success. If you try to start that on day one, you're kind of cooked, right?
Be a lot more difficult. Yeah, Maria, if you want to jump in.
Yeah, I think the number one thing creators don't realize is there's typically 200, 300 games just launching every single month. So it's an incredibly saturated space. Yeah. And you need to start building your audience far in advance, typically, I would say at least 3 to 4 months. And whether that's through digital marketing, attending cons, doing play tests, all of that kind of goes to building it up. And that's what other creators are doing. So if you launch your project without having done that beforehand, you're going to be one of those projects that is going to be kind of drowning out in all that noise. Because with all the other projects who have then gone in and built a community, they have those fans rushing over to their pages. And you're not going to benefit from Kickstarter's organic traffic by not bringing in your own traffic. And I think services even like Gelup or BackerKit will then benefit from that as well. If you can create enough momentum, they're going to benefit from that. You're going to benefit from it as well, because then you can hopefully tap into their algorithm on Kickstarter, get in front of more people, whether it's at the top of the tabletop page or on the front page under the fresh favorites taking off. We want to maximize your actual visibility, not just beforehand, but on Kickstarter, day one, day two. I think creators need to know that those first 48 hours are vital to the success of your launch throughout, whether you do a 19, 30-day campaign.
Now, I know that you're saying, like, you have different categories you guys cover off, and you start off in tech. And I don't mean this as an insult. I mean this more as a more of a compliment more than anything, is that it almost seems like you came out of nowhere, at least on the board game side, right? Like, I'd say year and a half ago, I started hearing, but like, when you're saying 2015, like, you've been around for 9 years, right? Like, you've got a lot of, I would say probably data points behind you, right, in your model to help you figure out what is that perfect success model to ensure people are best primed when they launch. You know, when I look at this past year and a half, what was it that made you finally kind of shift over to, not shift over because you're still doing the other stuff, obviously, but put this kind of an emphasis on board games? Was it a concerted effort on your side, or was it just organically board game companies started approaching it?
Well, I want to pass to Maria, because she has been like a big proponent of trying to like test out going to that market, her, especially her being like very involved in a board gamer herself as well. And so anyways, I'll pass the mic to you.
Sure.
Yeah. I would agree with Mark. I think it's this last year and a half we found a lot of growth there. But the first game we worked on was called Pericle Gathering Darkness. I believe it was 2020, 2021. And a large reason why we had stayed away from the tabletop space is because they're lower price products. We're used to working on $100, $150 products. And with marketing, when you're running ads, it is more difficult for your margins to be profitable with a lower price item. So we took on Pericle knowing that it did have a higher price, and it went really well. It's this really incredible RPG that has software embedded as well. And after we found success with that, I think we slowly started taking on some more. But last year we took on a project, Botany. And that's really when we found kind of the switch of, if we can make this work, a $39 game, then I really think our strategy will apply even further. But I think I lost your question there as I was going through it. So can you repeat that question? So
it was more along the lines of this decision to go on board games specifically. And Mark was saying that, you know, you know, your attention to this industry and this category, really seeing kind of the value for the backers. But I was wondering, was it more of a push from your end, or is it more organic where, you know, board game designers, developers, and so forth were coming to Launchroom saying, hey, I need to kind of figure this out. And I see that you've been successful over here in the tech industry. Kind of how did that kind of come together?
I think it's a mix of both. Like Mark said, me and a few other team members at Launchroom play games, right? We love them, and it makes up 30% of Kickstarter. So it was kind of like, hey, why aren't we doing this? We love it. There is a nuance to marketing that community, because in the tabletop space, it's a really wonderful community that's already there. And then we started having creators at the same time come to us. And as we started taking them on and finding success, I think it gave us more confidence to then go and build out an actual program that caters towards creators in this space. Mm-hmm. So a blend of both. You have people who approached us because they saw what we were doing with crowdfunding, even if it wasn't necessarily in the game space. And we internally really wanted to finally dive head first and get our hands wet and just really understand the space for ourselves. And even now, one of my colleagues, Victor, will be launching his own game in the upcoming future. So it's fun, right? We can help with marketing, and now we'll be experiencing it ourselves internally.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
How big is the company now?
Oh, excuse me. I was going to say, you heard it here first. Victor from our team is launching a game. We should have shut the new Yeah, no, we're super excited for him to do that, though. But anyway, yeah, we're about 25. We're 25.
Wow.
I should know that answer.
How's that grown over there? Like, are you finding now, because I got to imagine the demand is accelerating, right, for your services. As more success, people are seeing the success, it's like, oh, wow, you know, you start connecting the dots and you see all these successful campaigns, and then you see Launchboom at the bottom of them. Clearly, that's going to draw a lot of people in to say, hey, I need to check this out for my game as well. How have you scaled that up? Is this something where you've been slowly adding to the team? Has this been something that's been kind of accelerated over the past year or 2 years, or?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I am personally, okay, the whole company, we're very hesitant to add team members in general. Yeah. So it's, you know, we're trying to, let's say, solve problems when it comes to how we can still deliver the best fulfillment experience to our clients without adding new team members in general. With that said, I would say that we did hire over the past, I mean, this year, with anticipation of some growth, but it wasn't that many. Like, we were about 20 people about a year ago. And so we've just added positions here and there, like someone in the events team to help us go to mainly more board game events, yeah, and cons and conventions. But mostly it was on the fulfillment side. I would say we are not trying to be this huge organization though. Like, I don't want this to be the big thing with tons of people and tons of middle management and all this type of stuff. It's like, we, part of Launch Boom and like the culture is to keep it small. And I mean, 25 is, it's getting a little bit bigger, you know, but yeah, at the same time, it's a very, like, we talk every single day, right? Our team all jumps on a huddle every single day. We are talking about all the projects we're working on every single Friday. We're going through like goals as a team. So it's very much trying to keep this small so that there is, you know, there's all these trade-offs that come when you get too big and everything. So anyways, not to go into all the business stuff, but I think it is important because we really want to be able to keep it small enough that we can focus on really what matters, which is being able to move really quickly in the space, listen to feedback from our clients to adjust and try to make ultimately the best type of, at the end of the day, marketing strategy that's going to allow them to have the best launches and ultimately lead to them turning into a business. That's kind of like our guiding light. Like, you'll hear me just keep saying that.
Yeah.
And yeah, simple answer. No, I don't think we're going to keep growing too much more in terms of the team size.
And how does your team spread out globally? Because obviously you have different markets. You have Canada, you have the US, UK, Germany, yeah, right? You have these key kind of hubs of the board gaming industry, where there's a huge concentration of not only consumers, but, you know, developers and designers and so forth. How have you been able to kind of service these different markets, or how have you structured yourself to do that?
Well, in terms of the team, like, we're majority are in North America. So, I mean, majority are US, and then we have some Canadians. And then we have some team members in South America. I was actually living in South America for 2 years prior to this. So I was one of them, but now I'm back in North America. And that's pretty much it. It's like South America, North America, and with the majority up in North America. And yeah, in terms of servicing clients from all around the world, that's been something that we've dealt with from the very beginning as well. So in the, let's say, the design and tech category, there are people all over the world, literally everywhere. And it just hasn't been an issue. I mean, when it comes to being able to service them, it's being able to schedule times that work for everyone, yeah, as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Germany at Essen when I really kind of started paying attention to Launch Boom, right? Because I was talking again to the Kelp team, and I'm like, how did you guys kind of get yourself set up for this? And they're like, Launch Boom, you know, and they started kind of walk me through, here's some of the things that we're doing with Launch Boom. And I was like, wow, you know, this is an interesting approach. For those who don't know Launch Boom, maybe when we step back a second here, and for the audience who are listening, can you explain kind of concisely what Launch Boom does and how you plug yourself into the model that people are going to take in terms of their launching?
I've been talking for a while. Maria, do you want to take this one?
Yeah. So the best way I can describe it is we're a hands-on consulting company. We have a program, Launch Boom Games, that is specific to the tabletop industry. And we have two incredible consulting experts, Victor, Adam, who work with our creators from start to finish of the process. And not only will you be interacting with our consultants, where we have workshops, we have unlimited email support, we have this, our own kind of community forum, but we also have tools we built out. So incredible development team who's been able to build out a tool we use called Launch Kit that allows creators who maybe have no experience with marketing or development or building out a website, do it by using a drag and drop system. And it's hard to explain in words without showing you visually, but just imagine a tool that can help you create a website or a landing page for your game for the pre-launch in a matter of minutes or hours, depending on your capabilities. But it helps you build out that marketing funnel from start to finish. Then we come in and we work with creators, guiding them on the exact step-by-step process we'll be taking. So setting that page up, starting to develop ads that we can send traffic to that page, having a communication strategy on the back end. What do we want to say? When do we want to say it? And all those things that creators might not know, we can come in and provide tools, materials, and resources around. So it's super collaborative. It's very back and forth. And creators come to us. Yeah, we just kind of go from the pre-launch all the way to the end of the campaign. Like Mark said earlier, we do focus a majority on that pre-launch, but we're not hopping out when your campaign is live. We're there from start to finish. But it's a lot of involvement. And I think one of my favorite parts of our program is we have a community of creators. So you're not just interacting with our team, you're interacting with people who might be launching their game soon or already have. So if you go to our platform, you'll see different creators giving feedback to each other. It's not just us, which I had once one of our clients come up to me and said, hey, you created my favorite form of social media right now, because he has this kind of direct line of access to the people who are going through the exact same process as him. So it's nice to see. It's really wonderful. But yeah, I just boil it down to a pretty hands-on consulting program, very collaborative, with a lot of tools and materials that rely on the data we've been able to acquire from doing all these campaigns over the past 10 years.
And then with these tools, you know, when people are thinking about like hiring marketing services, like whether they're hiring Gelop and Backer Kit and Crowdfunding Nerds, perhaps, or even like Launchboom in this case, you know, often the question comes up is, you know, how costly is this going to be? How much of my funds do I have to give up in terms of percentages and things like this? So this is clear for people, because one thing that surprised me, and you can clarify it if I'm wrong, is I was under the understanding, or the assumption, not the understanding, I assumed that there was going to be some back end, hey, we're going to take 10%, 15%, 20% of whatever the overall take is. And when I was talking with one of your colleagues, Jesse, I believe it was, they said that's actually not the case, which surprised me. So can you explain, we don't have to get into exact numbers, but kind of how that model works? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's completely fair. And yeah, so you, with all these different services, they have different models. We try to make it really simple for creators. So we have a one-time upfront fee. And based on your location, if you're US-based, you can break that into installments. If you're outside the US, we can try and work and develop installments for that as well. But we don't take any commission. And the reason for that, well, there's a few reasons. But to me, one of the biggest things is, as you're growing your campaign, you want to consider your margins. And you're already giving 5% to Kickstarter. That's not including a 3% payment processing fee. You have other platforms as well. I don't want to forget. You have GameFound. You have Backer Kit. So think of the commission you're giving away through that. Then if you add more on top of it, it starts to grow. So you brought up Kelp earlier. And imagine if they were to give upwards of 10% of their campaign outward, and that would be a lot of money, right? We want creators to be able to invest the majority of what they're making back into their company. Do they want to do more games down the line? Do they want to be able to invest into e-commerce or develop relations through retail distribution? So we don't take any commission, 0% off of what you're raising. It's just a one-time upfront fee. Again, hopefully we can help a way for creators to break that into installments.
I think that's awesome. It shocked me when they told me that. I was like, what? Like, why wouldn't you grab a piece? Like, you know, you think of like Kelp, for example, as your point, right? But I think that allows them to take those funds and put them back into ads, right? And I think sometimes people are under this misunderstanding that, hey, if a campaign does really big numbers, right, it goes viral, so to speak, that all those funds are like generated like income, not realizing, no, that person had to keep scaling their ads to keep pace with that and keep that momentum going. And a good chunk of that's going to go back to paying Meta or whoever's running their ads for them. Right. So that's crazy. Another thing I was talking to, I think it was the Command and Conquer guys. And this is another thing that surprised me when I forget what we were talking about. And they said, that's a good question. I'm going to pose that to the group on our next weekly call. I was like, what? You have a weekly call with these guys? Like, couldn't get my head around the scope of how it's like you guys have built this community, right? That kind of works together and, you know, passes ideas back and forth off each other and kind of share their experiences.
Yeah, that was like a big part of it. Actually, when we were first starting, was we knew that the community piece was going to be like such an asset in and of itself as we continued to build this thing. Because, I think we know quite a bit in terms of what we're good at, right? And then there's so many other things that go into launching a game, right? There's so much stuff that we're not experts at. We really aren't. And so, but other people are, you know, and there's people that are coming into the program that have launched many different games and, you know, have different perspectives or different types of games, and maybe they're trying different things and they can share it with the community as well. So that was like a big part of, let's say, I call it like the thesis, right? Of like, let's go forward to the hypothesis of, you know, let's try to make the program have this community aspect and really nurture that. And so far it's been awesome. Really, really awesome. Like better than I honestly like originally anticipated in terms of like just how great the people are in there and like the knowledge that they're willing to share with other creators. I think social media in general, like I don't really like browsing that very much, but like this is really fun. It's like a really curated social media feed of stuff that like I'm super interested in, you know? And so that piece has been probably one of the coolest parts, honestly, that of like building this whole thing, is just seeing that community grow.
Yeah. What would you say is like one of the single most important tools within the toolkit that you have that your creators find the most useful?
I mean, it's really how we build pre-launch audiences is like the main thing. I mean, to Maria's point, it's like, if you're in the program, we're not going to, you know, you're not going to launch and we're going to, you know, wave goodbye and good luck. It's definitely not going to happen. But the majority, I would say, like the thing that we're really known for and where people are finding the most value is, how do you go out and find new audiences and then have them join your like pre-launch community, your pre-launch list? And how do you know that those people are going to be like likely to want to back your project? And how do you essentially use that audience to then have a successful launch? It's kind of like all those pieces. And so, you know, like very specifically what we're doing is we're teaching people how to use ads. I don't know if we said that explicitly. I mean, there are other ways to drive traffic, but our bread and butter is our ads, meta ads. So like Facebook and Instagram, it's like that platform, even through this whole time of us doing this, like there's been nothing that's been able to be as effective. And when I say effective, I mean like be able to drive, let's say like really targeted traffic, like the people that you want, be able to find them online and be able to do it in a way that's cost effective enough so that creators can actually make a positive return on their investment.
Yeah.
And so we're teaching creators and guiding them through this process of how to actually do this themselves. I would say like just like some interesting tips when it comes to targeting. I just thought this was really cool in the game space, but like your theme of your game is like so important. And I'm sure everyone listening to this knows that, but it's like you can take your theme and then use that as part of your targeting. So let's say like Botany, for example, you know, one of their best performing audiences in terms of people they were targeting on Meta were people that were interested in gardening and botany, you know, and like all these different interests, where typically I feel like when people were looking at board game audiences, they would try to target people that are interested in board games, which makes sense. I mean, that you do want to still target that. Like there should be an audience there, but it's really interesting, as I think that's one of the things that we've found, or feedback from creators that have worked with us, is like we're showing them, because we come from kind of like this different category. I mean, we are coming from this different category of design tech, and we have this like very specific way of thinking about finding interest and targeting them on Meta. You know, people are using that in the board game space and finding that they're able to actually bring in a lot of new people into their audience and into Kickstarter and into the board game world as well, which has also been one of the coolest things, is that it's not just like marketing to people. I feel like in the past, like a lot of people would be like just marketing to people that are already in the board game space and kind of already know about Kickstarter and all that stuff. But I feel like we've been able to find a way to like bring new people in. And that's something that a lot of people have found valuable. Not only if you're a new creator, which are the majority of people we work with, by the way, are new creators. But also existing creators, you know, that are looking for ways to just build their community, build their audience, you know.
How do you handle that Venn diagram though, right? So you have, you know, people who, in your case, botany, right? People like botany. Yeah. And then you have people who like board games. And you have people who actually understand what Kickstarter is and how to go with this whole pledging thing and how I don't get my game for a year, but I'm going to spend kind of the pledge the money now and so forth. And where those three things intersect, is that where you're trying to hone in on? Because I would think that the cost of getting someone who's never used Kickstarter to make the leap into actually using the platform is got to be more costly than trying to find somebody who both likes botany and board games and understands Kickstarter.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, if that Venn diagram, it's a really good visual. I can like see that the people that are in the middle of that Venn diagram are likely going to be like the cheapest people to advertise to. But what we found is that people that might be in like a different part of the Venn diagram, like maybe they're interested in using botany again as an example, they're interested in botany and maybe they played a few board games, right? So they have like that interest, but they've never used Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You can still market to them and do it in a way that essentially brings the cost down low enough so that it is worth it. If that makes sense, it's like maybe you won't have as high of a conversion rate, like the amount of people that you brought in from that group that turned into a backer, but because you were able to market to them in a way that was cost effective enough, which is mainly like that comes down to like how we're teaching creators how to actually do the advertising.
Yeah.
Then it can be worth it. Meaning like you can get a positive return on your ad spend. And I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know that botany, because if you go on Kickstarter, you can look up on the community tab, like the amount of new backers to Kickstarter from the project. And it was very high. I would say it was like higher than normal. And hasn't been the case with like every project. I'm not going to say like every project that we help, you know, ends up being like this massive amount of new backers coming in, but it seems like it tends to be a little bit higher than what I've seen in the past, which is pretty cool. It's like bringing in this like new audience into Kickstarter, which I think is great for everyone, you know.
And once they're in there, they're in, right? They're now in the ecosystem, right?
Right.
What about like, can you talk a little bit about incentives? I've seen some heat online recently about like pre-incentives for people to kind of lock in the, I don't want to say the pledge, but make like a stickier pledge, right? Or a stickier lead in terms of like offering incentives and so forth. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because from my perspective, I come from this position of don't hate the player, hate the game. And I ran into this on one of my last campaigns where I had like a, we did like this free mini if you backed within the first like 48 hours. And the amount of vitriol that came out on my page for people are saying, hey, this is ridiculous. This is BS. And I actually messaged some of these guys. I was like, hey, man, this is the system. Like I'm working within the way the system works. And the reality is the algorithms are based on that day one pledge. How high that day one pledge goes, that's going to drive a lot of how that campaign is going to flow and where it's going to end in the reverse bell curve and so forth. And these are tools that work for making that pledge sticky, right? So like, don't blame me, blame the system, right? But I'm going to work within the system because my job is to make this the most successful campaign I can.
Right.
That being said, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So, I mean, specifically what you're talking about is around pushback on a very specific part of the pre-launch strategy, which is giving an offer of let's say like an add-on that would be available during the campaign, but you can get it now for $1, right? During the pre-launch, that has been getting some backlash. Just to back up in terms of like the rationale behind all of this. And I did like a pretty long video, so I'm not gonna like repeat everything.
No, it's okay.
Right now, but I will give like the overview on it. Because I do think it's important is If you go back to the beginning when we were doing pre-launch back in even like 2015 when we first started, it was actually for the first few years, like it was up until 2017, I believe, is when we like officially like started trying this new reservation funnel is what we call it.
Yeah.
We would build pre-launch audiences by driving traffic from Meta to a funnel and then just collecting an email address. That was like the most typical way of you know, building an audience. And the problem with that is that we would have some campaigns that would be successful. Like they would have good launches just using that very simple strategy. I think we kind of got lucky with some of those because we would have other campaigns that would not be successful at all. And they would still have really low cost per leads. I should have said that before, because typically when you were building these lists, not typically, what we would look at is how can you get the lowest cost per email, right?
Yeah.
Like how much it cost me on Facebook to get someone to give me their email. And what we found is that that actually having the lowest cost per email isn't really the best indicator that someone is likely to follow through with the game or follow through with the purchase of the game or the of the project, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, then people would end up losing money, right, on their ads. So we were trying to figure out, okay, how can you do something in the pre-launch? Because again, we know that having a big day one is really important to stand out and it sets your campaign up for success. So how do you reduce the risk in the pre-launch? And we tried different things. Like I didn't talk about this in the video, but like one of the main things we were trying was like different like survey tools. Like we would survey people after they gave us the email, ask them like questions like basically how likely you are to want to follow through with the purchase, pricing questions, all different things like that. And we just didn't find a correlation of people that would actually say they were going to follow through with, you know, the purchase and like them actually doing that thing. And that's because there really isn't like a cost, you know, associated with doing something like that in the pre-launch. And so a lot of people might say, yeah, I'm going to do it, but then they ended up not doing it. And so that's where we actually saw like another campaign doing this that wasn't on Kickstarter. Actually, it was one of our video editors at the time, shout out Rebecca. And she's like, hey, look at this project is like doing this $1 offer in the pre-launch. And I was like, that's really interesting. So I reached out to that founder and he said, yeah, this is just a much better way of really identifying the people that are most interested in your launch. Right. And I was like, well, that makes sense. But they were giving something valuable in return. It wasn't just like, hey, give me a dollar and support me. It was like, give me a dollar and then here is some type of value that you're getting, whether I don't know what it was in the case of that project, but let's say like it's an add-on, right? And so anyways, this is like the long explanation of putting down that dollar. We just found that those people that do that are much more likely to actually follow through with the purchase. They're essentially like raising their hand and saying that, you know, I am someone that is more interested than this other person that's not giving the dollar right now.
Yeah.
And what that allows you to do as a creator is optimize your ads in the pre-launch for a much better metric, a much better indicator of the likelihood that someone will purchase, which ultimately allows you to have a higher likelihood of having a higher return on your ad spend, you know, because you're able to optimize your ads better. So I know we're kind of talking like optimization, ads, all these different things. I hope that makes sense.
Like
the general idea is how do you decrease risk as much as possible in the pre-launch by trying to create something that gives value to the backer, the person that's giving you the dollar, and then that gives value back to the creator in the form of, let's say, useful information, you know, that then can be given to Facebook to optimize the ads. And so ultimately that leads to them spending less money to basically acquire people on their email list that are more likely to then purchase, which allows them to hopefully make a higher return on their investment. That's what we've seen.
It makes sense. And I wanted to throw that out there because I think it's important to kind of acknowledge, but coming from someone who's a company of one, right? And this is the majority of the hobby industry is your 1 to 3 employees, right? And most of those people they've got day jobs and this is a side gig or it's a side hustle, right? And again, if I think back to that last campaign I had and I had some people jump, I had this free first player marker, I had some people jumping on me and I could see in the comments saying, all these big corporate conglomerates, you know, they're all this money they're making and they should just throw us in for free. And I'm like, hey guy, I'm in my basement, man. I'm one guy like home from work in my basement trying to crank this campaign out, right? Like, try to keep that in the back of your mind before you kind of, you know, pounce as an industry. And of course, just like anybody, I'm going to use whatever tools I can. They're going to, as you said, reduce my risk, make those pledges as sticky as possible, and predict as best as I can what the outcome is going to be so I can control my spend. And even when you do all that, no one's driving Lambos making board games, right? It's something where maybe you make a little bit of money and you can use that money to then put into the next game because it's something you love and it's a hobby and something you're passionate about. But yeah, I certainly think Launch Boom is has been a great addition to this industry in terms of helping, again, these solo entrepreneurs try to realize their dreams, right?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I really do. Yeah, I mean, I think when it, like, there's a few things that you said there that I think are important is like, well, one, like trying to make some money, I think is a good yeah. thing. Like sometimes I feel like it feels like, you know, money equals bad or profit equals bad or something when it comes to, like marketing equals bad, but all these things ultimately are, if done the right way, like intentions matter. I mean, not only intentions, but like also like, are you actually doing marketing with integrity? I mean, there's talks of you like, are you being like manipulative or like predatory and all these things, which again, to me, like signals more of like, are you being like integrous, you know, like, mm-hmm. are you being honest with your marketing? And I would say that, yeah, there are ways to in marketing to definitely be non-integrity, like to hide the truth of your intentions. But there are ways to do the, like the whole pre-launch strategy that we just talked about in ways that are very transparent, yeah. you know? And I think as long as a creator, you are doing that, to me, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I also think, again, back to the money thing, that it's important to realize that creators are trying to make money so that they can make the thing that the backers want, yeah. and ultimately I think lead to creating a healthier crowdfunding ecosystem altogether. If we can have that happen more often, meaning like have creators make money more often, because I think a lot of people may be surprised at how many times creators lose money, you know, to yeah. bring whatever their idea is to life, because it is expensive and it is risky. So, I mean, it goes both ways. Like it's backers and creators in this, and we have to listen to feedback on both sides. I mainly just like, I hope the conversation that there's empathy on both sides of what's happening, yeah, and sure. not jumping to, let's say, like the worst intentions possible, or thinking that someone might have the worst intentions possible if they might disagree with the marketing strategy that they're using.
Yeah. The risk even goes way beyond the campaign. It only takes one boat getting stuck in the Suez Canal for yeah. Your shipping rates go through the roof, right? Yeah. And like I've lived through that on campaigns where, you know, the yeah. container crisis, right, during yeah. COVID. And yeah. I end up eating that. And thank God I had margin built into my campaign where I was able to eat that. Otherwise, I would have been like in the red significantly, right? So,
right.
you know, again, we're just all doing our best to try to live our passion and bring the best product we can to the marketplace. And I think that's amazing. So for you guys, I mean, you mentioned your colleague is launching a game. Is that the next game that you're working on that's coming out? Or is there another game with someone else you're working on that's coming first? Or?
There is another. Hover, which is our colleague's game, Victor, he's still in the prototyping process. I've played it. It's incredible. That's not the next one to come, though. But definitely keep an eye out for it. We have a campaign launching tomorrow with Hit Point Press. Incredible team. They're launching the Field Guide to Floral Dragons. It's a supplement, and I believe in the 5e space for D&D. And it's wonderful. So it'll be launching 8 a.m. tomorrow on Kickstarter. And we're really excited for it. It's got incredible artwork. I highly recommend going to check it out. And it's, yeah, see for yourself. I think it speaks for itself. But that's one that I'm looking forward to. Another from a previous creator we've worked with that is coming out April 30th is Lafleur from the team behind Botany. Dusty, Amy, a husband and wife duo. Incredible creators. If you ever want to see any content, they have a ton out there, but they're launching another game in the world of Botany. It's got this floral theme based in gardens in France. And actually the game board is a map of 18th century France that
That's cool.
they got, I believe it's drawn out from an aerial shot of France at the time. And we were trying to discuss, okay, how do we think they even got that? And we believe it's from like a hot air balloon because they didn't have anything in that time to get it. So that's two wild. Really great campaigns coming out. I highly recommend checking out. We're super excited for those to launch.
Oh, that's amazing. And then for anybody who's either watching on the replay or listening to this, I'm going to put a link in the show notes as well to the LaunchBoom website, but simply just launchboom.com. Very easy to find. Check it out. Tons of tools in there for people that are looking to maybe do their first venture, or even those who've maybe launched other games. They just kind of want to up their Kickstarter game. Definitely worth checking out as well. Mark, Maria, I want to thank you so much for your time today. And I can't wait to see what's coming next.
Yeah. Thank you, James.
Thanks, James. Take care. Appreciate it.
Cheers. This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.